Chapter 16. Natural hypnosis. A trance is a trance is a trance. What is the reality behind reality? Is physical life a hallucination? Is there some definable concrete reality, of which your own is a mere shadow? Your reality is the result of a hallucination, if by this you mean that it is only the picture shown by your senses. Physically, of course, your existence is perceived through the senses. In that context, corporeal life is an entrance one, with the focus of attention largely concentrated through the senses' belief in the reality of their sensations. Yet that experience is the image that reality takes for you now, and so in other terms earthly life is one version of reality, not reality in its entirety but a part of it. It is in itself an avenue through which you perceive what reality is. In order to explore that experience, you direct your attention to it and use all of your other non-physical abilities as corollaries, adjuncts, additions. You hypnotize your very nerves, and the cells within your body, for they will react as you expect them to react, and the beliefs of your conscious mind are followed in degree by all portions of the self down to the smallest atom and molecule. The large events of your life, your interactions with others, including the habitual workings of the most minute physical events within your body, all of this follows your conscious belief. Again, if you are ill, you may say, I did not want to be sick, or if you are poor, I did not want to be poor, or if you are unloved, I did not want to be lonely. Yet for your own reasons, you began to believe in illness more than health, in poverty more than abundance, in loneliness rather than affection. You may have accepted some of these ideas from your parents. Their effects may have surrounded you, or you may have switched beliefs in one particular area of your life. But each can be changed if you utilize the power of action in the present. I am not saying that every one of you must or should be healthy, wealthy and wise. I am only addressing those here now who have effects in their lives with which they are dissatisfied. In one manner of speaking, then, the suggestions you give yourselves constantly operate overall as beliefs that are reflected in your experience. Some of you are simply mentally lazy. You do not consciously examine the data that you receive. Many who make a practice of denying negative suggestions from others, asserting positive affirmations instead, actually do so because they are so fully convinced that the power of negative beliefs is stronger than that of beneficial ones. Each of you will find habitual thought patterns in your own life backed up by resulting action, conditioned behavior as it were, by which you continually reinforce negative aspects, concentrate upon them to the exclusion of conflicting data, and so bring them into experience through natural hypnosis. Many people assign great power to a hypnotist, yet whenever you have the undivided attention of another, you act as a hypnotist to a large degree. Whenever you have your own undivided attention, you act as hypnotist and subject simultaneously. You give yourselves post-hypnotic suggestions all the time, particularly when you project present conditions into the future. I want to impress upon you the fact that all of this simply follows the natural function of the mind, and to dispel any ideas that you have about the magical aspects of hypnosis. For 5 or 10 minutes a day at the most, then, use natural hypnosis as a method of accepting desired new beliefs. During that period, concentrate your attention as vividly as possible upon one simple statement. Repeat it over and over while focusing upon it for this time. Try to feel the statement in whatever way is possible. That is, do not allow distractions, but if your mind insists upon running about, then channel its images in line with your declaration. The repetition, verbally or mentally, is important because it activates biological patterns and reflects them. Do not strain. This exercise should not be done along with the point of power exercise given earlier. See in asterisk 657th session in chapter 15. One should not run into the other, but should be carried out on separate occasions during the day. During the period, however, do remember that you are using the present as a moment of power to insert new beliefs, and that these will indeed be materialized. When the exercise is finished, do not dwell upon it. Put it from your mind. You will have utilized natural hypnosis in a concentrated form. You may have to experiment some for the proper wording of your message, but 3 days at the very least are necessary before you can tell, through results, how effective it has been. A change of wording may be in order. When you feel right about the statement, then continue it. Your attention should be completely relaxed otherwise, for time is needed. You may experience spectacular results at once, but continue the exercise even if this happens. inner channels must become repatterned. There will be a feel to this that will serve as your own individual guideline. There is no need to continue the practice over 10 minutes. In fact, many will find that difficult to do. Spending a longer period of time simply reinforces the idea of problems involved. Natural hypnosis is the acquiescence of the unconscious to conscious belief. In periods of concentrated focus, with all distractions cut out, the desired ideas are then implanted, in formal hypnosis. The same processes occur in normal life, however, areas of primary concentration then regulate your experience both biologically and mentally, and generate similar conditions. Let us give a simple example, using a positive belief instilled in childhood. An individual is told that he is comely, well-proportioned, and possesses a likable personality. The idea takes hold. The person acts in line with this belief in all ways, but also a variety of subsidiary beliefs grow up about the main one. The belief in personal worth draws about it the belief in the personal value of others, for they show their best faces to our fortunate friend. His life constantly reinforces this concept, and while he is peripherally aware that some people are nicer than others, his main intimate experience allows him to see the best in others and in himself. This becomes one of the strong frameworks through which he views existence. Data or stimuli that does not agree is a side issue, not personally applicable but present, he realizes, as fact for others. He will not need to prove himself, so it will be easier for him to accept contemporaries with fairness. There may be areas in which he realizes he is not adequate, yet because of his belief in his basic worth he will be able to accept these lacks as a part of himself without feeling threatened by them. He will be able to try to improve his condition without knocking himself down at the same time. Now, in those terms he may or may not be as attractive, feature by feature, as some other individuals who believe, in fact, that they are unattractive. The belief in his own comeliness is so important that others will react to him in the same fashion. An individual can have great native beauty, for example, but this beauty is not apparent to others, or to the individual. The person does not believe that he or she possesses it, and mars the actual physical features so that the comeliness becomes literally invisible. Your beliefs, then, are like hypnotic focuses. You reinforce them constantly through the normal inner talking in which you all indulge. This inner communication acts like the constant repetition of a hypnotist. In this case, however, you are your own hypnotist. Few people will have simply one main area of concentration. Usually several are involved, but these represent the ways in which you are using your energy. The individual who takes it for granted that he is worthwhile does not need to belabor the point. His ensuing experiences come naturally to him. In many areas of your own life, those in which you are satisfied, you need make no effort. Your conscious thoughts and concentrations bring about results with which you are pleased. It is only in those compartments of your life that confound you that you suddenly begin to wonder what is happening. But here also, natural hypnosis is at work just as easily and naturally, and your conscious ideas are automatically coming to physical fruition. So it is in these areas that you must realize that you are the hypnotist. The unconscious accepts those orders given to it by the conscious mind. In each person's experience, there are areas with which he or she is pleased. When you find yourself dissatisfied, however, question the orders you are giving in that particular arena of experience. The results do not seem, now, to follow your conscious desires. But you will find that they do follow your conscious beliefs, which may be quite different. You may desire health, but believe implicitly in your state of poor health. You may desire spiritual understanding, while thinking that you are spiritually unworthy and opaque. When you set your longing against a present belief, there is always conflict. Your belief will generate the proper feelings and imaginative endeavors characteristic of it. If you want to be healthy and continually contrast what you want with the present conviction in your poor health, then the belief itself, set up against the desire, will cause added difficulties. In such a case you seem to want the impossible. Desire and belief are not united but apart. In formal hypnosis you make an agreement with the hypnotist. For a while you will accept his ideas about reality instead of your own. If he tells you that there is a pink elephant in front of you, then you will see it and believe it is there, and act according to the suggestions given. If you are a good subject and your hypnotist a good practitioners, then blisters can arise on your skin if he tells you that you have been burned. You can perform physical feats that you would consider impossible otherwise, all of this because you willingly suspend certain beliefs and allow yourself to accept others for the moment. Unfortunately, because of the pattern considered necessary, it is thought that the conscious mind is lulled and its activity suspended. Quite the contrary. It is focused, intensified, narrowed to a specific area, and all other stimuli are cut out. This intensity of conscious concentration cuts down barriers and allows the messages to go directly to the unconscious, where they are acted upon. The hypnotist, however, is important in that he acts as a direct representative of authority. In your terms, beliefs are accepted initially from the parents, this, as mentioned earlier, having to do with mammalian experience. See Chapter 4. The hypnotist then acts as a parent substitute. In cases of therapy, an individual is already frightened, and because of the beliefs in your civilization, he looks not to himself but to an authority figure for help. Even in primitive societies, which doctors and other natural therapists have understood that the point of power is in the present, and they have utilized natural hypnosis as a method of helping other individuals to concentrate their own energy. All of the gestures, dances, and other procedures are shock treatments, startling the subject out of habitual reactions so that he or she is forced to focus upon the present moment. The resulting disorientation simply shakes current beliefs and dislodges set frameworks. The hypnotist, or witch doctor, or therapist, then immediately inserts the beliefs he thinks the subject needs. Within this context, subsidiary groupings will be included that involve the therapist's own ideas. In your society, regression is often involved. The patient will remember and relive a traumatic experience from the past. This will then appear to be the cause of the present difficulty. If hypnotist and subject both accept this, then at that level there will be progress. If the cultural concepts include voodoo or witchcraft, then the therapeutic situation will be seen in that context, and a curse uncovered, which, using the PowerPoint of the present, the doctor will then reverse. Quite without the context of formal hypnosis, however, the same issues apply. With the greatest understanding and compassion, let me mention that Western medicine is in its way one of the most uncivilized hypnotic devices. The most educated Western doctors will look with utter dismay and horror at the thought of a chicken being sacrificed in a primitive witch doctor's hut, and yet will consider it quite scientific and inevitable that a woman sacrifice two breasts to cancer. The doctors will simply see no other way out, and unfortunately neither will the patient. A modern Western physician, granted, with the greatest discomfiture, will inform his patient that he is about to die, impressing upon him that his situation is hopeless, and yet will react with scorn and loathing when he reads that a voodoo practitioner has put a curse upon some innocent victim. In your time, medical men, again with great superiority, look at primitive cultures and harshly judge the villagers they think are held in the sway of witch doctors or voodoo ism, and yet through advertisement and organization, your doctors impress upon each individual in your culture that you must have a physical examination every 6 months or you will get cancer, that you must have medical insurance because you will become ill. In many instances, therefore, modern physicians are inadequate witch doctors who have forgotten their craft, hypnotists who no longer believe in the power of healing, and whose suggestions bring about other diseases which are diagnosed in advance. You are told what to look for. You are as cursed, far more, as any native in a tiny village, only you lose breasts, appendixes, and other portions of your anatomy. The doctors follow their own ideas, of course, and in that system they see themselves as completely justified, as humane. In the medical field, as in no other, you are faced directly with the full impact of your beliefs, for doctors are not the healthiest, but the least healthy. They fall prey to the beliefs to which they so heartily subscribe. Their concentration is upon disease, not health. Your doctors are also the victims of their own belief system, in other words. They constantly surround themselves with negative suggestions. When disease is seen as an invader, forced upon the integrity of the self for no reason, then the individual seems powerless and the conscious mind an adjunct. The patient is sometimes compelled to sacrifice one organ after another to his beliefs, and to the doctors. Luckily, you have other underground beliefs, in chiropractic, health foods, and even quacks. These all provide some other framework in which problems can be solved in matters of health. At least in these cases, damaging drugs are not given, and the integrity of the body is not further maligned. Chiropractors, again, are hypnotists. Unfortunately, they are trying to gain respectability in medical terms, and are therefore emphasizing the scientific aspects of their work, and playing down the intuitive elements and natural healing. The quacks end up with those who are hopeless, who realize the ineffectiveness of other belief systems, find them wanting, and have no place to go. Some of the quacks may be unscrupulous and dishonest, yet many of them possess an intuitive understanding, and can work cures through the instant alteration of belief. The medical profession is fond of saying that such individuals prevent patients from seeking proper treatment. The fact is that such patients no longer believe in the doctor's system of belief, and so could not be helped by them. To a medical man, all of this will seem like the sheerest heresy, because disease will always be seen as an objective thing in the body, to be objectively treated and removed. But a man who feels that he has no heart will not be saved by the most sophisticated heart transplant, unless first that belief is changed. In other areas, an individual who thinks that he is poor will lose or misuse, or badly invest, any amount of money, whether he works hard for it or is given it. A person who has hypnotized himself into a state of loneliness will be desolate, although surrounded by 100 friends and admirers. What does all of this mean to you in your daily life, and how can you utilize natural hypnosis to better your experience? In those areas in which you are dissatisfied, you feel that you are powerless, or that your will is paralyzed, or that conditions continue despite what you think of as your intent. Yet if you pay attention to your own quite conscious thoughts, you will find that you are concentrating upon precisely those negative aspects that so appall you. You are hypnotizing yourself quite effectively and so reinforcing the situation. You may say, horrified, "What can I do? I am hypnotizing myself into my overweight condition, or my loneliness, or my poor health." Yet in other facets of your life you may be hypnotizing yourself into wealth, accomplishment, satisfaction, and here you do not complain. The same issues are involved. The same principles are operating. In those positive life situations you are certain of your initiative. There is no doubt. Your beliefs become reality. Now, in the unsatisfactory aspects, you must understand this, there is also no doubt. You are utterly convinced that you are sick, or poor, or lonely, or spiritually opaque, or unhappy. The results, then, as easily and effortlessly follow. Natural hypnosis, in the terms given here, operates as well in one case as in the other. What should you do, then? First of all, you must realize that you are the hypnotist. You must seize the initiative here as you have in other positive aspects of your life. Whatever the superficial reasons for your beliefs, you must say. In the medical field, as in no other, you are faced directly with the full impact of your beliefs, for doctors are not the healthiest, but the least healthy. They fall prey to the beliefs to which they so heartily subscribe. Their concentration is upon disease, not health. For a certain amount of time, I will momentarily suspend what I believe in this area, and willfully accept the belief I want. I will pretend that I am under hypnosis, with myself as hypnotist and subject. For that time, desire and belief will be one. There will be no conflict because one do this willingly. For this period I will completely alter my old beliefs. Even though I sit quietly, in my mind I will act as if the belief I want were mine completely. At this point do not think of the future, but only of the present. If you are overweight, insert the weight that you think is ideal for you while you are following this exercise. Imagine that you are healthy if you have the belief that you are not. If you are lonely, believe that you are filled with a feeling of companionship instead. Realize that you are exerting your initiative to imagine such situations. Here there can be no comparison with your normal situation. Use visual data, or words, whatever is most natural to you. And again, no more than 10 minutes is required. If you do this faithfully, within a month you will find the new conditions materializing in your experience. Your neurological structure will respond automatically. The unconscious will be aroused, bringing its great powers to bear, bringing you the new results. Do not try to overdo this, to go through the entire day worrying about beliefs. For example, this can only cause you to contrast what you have with what you want. Forget the exercise when it is completed. You will find yourself with impulses that arrive in line with these newly inserted beliefs, and then it is up to you to act on these and not ignore them. The initiative must be yours. You will never know unless you try the exercise. Now, if you are in poor health, and have a physician, you had better continue going to him, because you still rely on that system of belief, but use these exercises as supplements to build up your own sense of inner health, and to protect you against any negative suggestions given by your doctor. Utilize the belief in physicians since you have it. There is a definite correlation between what is called conditioning and compulsive action. Here, post-hypnotic suggestion operates as well as constant daily conditioning. Now, for an example, take a woman who feels compelled to wash her hands 20 or 30 times a day. It is easy to recognize the fact that such repeated behavior is compulsive. But when a man's ulcers bother him every time he eats certain foods, it is more difficult to perceive the fact that this behavior is also compulsive and repetitive. This is an excellent example of the way in which natural hypnotism can act to affect your system adversely. In a manner of speaking, repetitious actions intimately involve beliefs at the magical level. The behavior usually represents efforts to ward off evil that the individual feels is imminent. While it is easy then to understand the nature of exterior actions of repetitive quality, it is far more difficult to see many physical symptoms in the same light. But here also whole groups of recurring reactions to certain stimuli are involved. Behind them there is often the same kind of compulsion. In their own way, symptoms frequently operate, actually, as repetitive neurological ritual, meant to protect the sufferer from something else that he fears even more. Pause at 9:42. That is why belief systems are so important in dealing with health and illness. Each of the systems uses paraphernalia, gestures, medicine, treatment, that are the exterior manifestations of beliefs shared by healer and patient alike. The same sort of situation operates in hay fever, for instance, and for that matter in most other diseases. Natural hypnosis and conscious beliefs give their proper instructions to the unconscious, which then dutifully affects the body mechanism so that it responds in a manner harmonious with the beliefs. So you condition your body to react in certain fashions. Dealing with this is not a simple problem, of course, for the original suggestion of disease was in itself given because of another belief. Using formal hypnosis, and in the West, you may regress and discover where the suggestion was first given you. If you and your hypnotist believe in reincarnation, the source may be discovered in another life. In either case, if the therapy is effective, you may give up your symptoms if both you and the hypnotist implicitly believe in the situation and framework of those convictions. But behind that there is far more, for if you do not believe in your own worth as a human being, then you will simply get other symptoms that have to be removed in the same manner, using other past events as the excuse for the condition, if you are lucky. If you are not so lucky and your illness happens to involve your inner organs, then you may end up sacrificing one after another. All of this can be avoided through the realization that your point of power is in the present, as stated earlier in the 657th session in Chapter 15. Not only do you operate within your own personal beliefs, of course, but within a mass system to which you subscribe to one degree or another. Within that organization, medical insurance becomes a necessity for most of you, so I am not suggesting that you drop it. Nevertheless, let us look more closely at the situation. You are paying in advance for illness that you are certain will come your way. You are making all preparations in the present for a future illness. You are betting upon disease and not health. This is the worst kind of natural hypnosis. And yet within your system insurance is indeed a necessity, because the belief in illness so pervades your mental atmosphere. Many become ill only after taking out such insurance, and for those, the act itself symbolically represents an acceptance of disease. Even more unfortunate are the special policies for the elderly that detail in advance all of the most stereotyped and distorted concepts about health and age. There is a great correlation between the kind of policies that people take out, and the illnesses that they then fall prey to. Even more disadvantageous are the suggestions given, with the best of purposes in mind, concerning specific health areas dealing with prevention. There are two in particular that I would like to mention here. One is the cancer drive literature and television public service announcements in which the seven danger signals of cancer are given. Unfortunately, again, within the framework of your beliefs, this also becomes almost a necessity for many. Especially for those who, because of previous experience of one kind or another with the disease, are almost irrational in their fear of it. The literature and announcements act as strong negative suggestions, following the nature of natural hypnosis, as a conditioning process. You see, where you are looking for specific symptoms, and examining your body under the impetus of fear. To those already conditioned in such a manner, such procedures can cause cancers that would not otherwise occur. This does not mean that those individuals might not come down with another disease instead, but it does mean that the belief in disease is patterned and focused to particular symptoms by such methods. No wonder you need health insurance. Illness is not a foreign agency thrust upon you, but as long as you believe that it is, then you will accept it as such. You will also feel powerless to combat it. The second health area I want to touch upon concerns the elderly. Ideas of retirement fall generally into the same pattern, for hidden within them is the belief that at one time or another, at a specific age, your powers will begin to fail. These ideas are usually accepted by young and old alike. In believing them, the young automatically begin the gradual conditioning of their own bodies and minds. The results will be reaped. In your society particularly, given over so thoroughly to the pursuit of money, such beliefs bring about the most humiliating situations, especially for the male, who has often been told to equate his virility with his earning power. It is easy then to understand that when his capacity to earn is taken away, he feels castrated. Generally speaking, those who advocate health foods or natural foods subscribe to some of the same overall beliefs held by your physicians. They believe that diseases are the result of exterior conditions. Quite simply, their policy can be read, you are what you eat. Some in this group also subscribe to philosophical ideas that somewhat moderate those concepts, recognizing the importance of the mind. Often though, some strong suggestions of a very negative character are given, so that all foods except certain accepted ones are seen as bad for the body, and the cause of diseases. People become afraid of the food they eat, and the field of eating then becomes the arena. Moral values become attached to food, with some seen as good and some as bad. Symptoms appear, and are quite directly considered to be the natural result of ingesting foods on the forbidden list. In this system, at least, the body is not insulted with a bewildering assortment of drugs for therapy. It may, however, be starved of very needed nourishment. Beyond that, the whole problem of health and illness becomes simplistically applied, and here food is scrutinized. You are what you think, not what you eat, and to a large extent what you think about what you eat is far more important. What you think about your body, health, and illness will determine how your food is used, and how your chemistry handles fats, for instance, or carbohydrates. Your attitudes in preparing meals are highly important. Physically, it is true, but again generally speaking, that your body needs certain nourishments. But within that pattern there is great leeway, and the organism itself has the amazing capacity to make use of substitutes and alternates. The best diet in the world, by anyone's standards, will not keep you healthy if you have a belief in illness. A belief in health can help you utilize a poor diet to an amazing degree. If you are convinced that a specific food will give you a particular disease, it will indeed do so. It appears that certain vitamins will prevent certain diseases. The belief itself works while you are operating within that framework. Of course, a Western doctor may give vitamin shots or pills to a native child in another culture. The child need not know what particular vitamin is being given, or the name for his disease, but if he believes in the physician and Western medicine, he will indeed improve, and he will need the vitamins from then on. So will all the other children. Again, I am not saying, do not give vitamins to children, for within your framework this becomes nearly mandatory. You will find more vitamins to treat more diseases. As long as the system works, it will be accepted, but the trouble is that it is not working very well. If you are feeling poorly and happen to read an advertisement for vitamins, or a book about them, and are impressed, you will indeed benefit, at least for a while. Your belief will make them work for you, but if your insistence upon poor health persists, then the counter-suggestion represented by the vitamins will not be effective for long. The same applies to the public service announcements dealing with tobacco and drugs alike. The suggestion that smoking will give you cancer is far more dangerous than the physical effects of smoking, and can give cancer to people who might otherwise not be so affected, very intently. The well-meaning announcements pertaining to heroin, marijuana, and acid LSD can also be damaging, in that they structure in advance any experience that people who take drugs might have. On the one hand, You have a culture that publicly points out as common the often exaggerated dangers that can occur with drugs, and on the other holds out drugs as a method of therapy. Here the dangers become something like initiation rites, in which loss of life must be faced before full acceptance into the community can be established. But those involved with native initiation rituals knew far more what they were doing, and understood a framework of beliefs in which the outcome, success, was fairly well assured. All of this involves natural hypnosis. Let us return to the example of a gentleman who has ulcers. He believes implicitly that certain foods cause his stomach to behave in a particular manner. There is a medicine, however, that will stop his pain. As long as it is effective, the medicine further convinces him that his stomach difficulty can only be relieved in this fashion. It becomes a counter-suggestion, yet it is all a part of the same hypnotic process, based upon his belief in his original illness. While it gives temporary results, the fact that he needs it reinforces his dependency upon it. If his belief in his poor health continues unchecked, the medicine will no longer serve as an adequate countermeasure. It would seem only good sense to refrain from the foods that bring on the condition. Yet each time this is done, the individual acquiesces more and more to the hypnotic suggestion. He fully believes he will become ill if he eats the forbidden foods, and so he does. It never occurred to him to dispense with the belief, to realize that it alone sets up the conditioning process through the operation of self-hypnotism. The point of power is in the present. You must thoroughly understand that, and then you can take hold of your life and begin to use natural hypnosis for your benefit in all areas. It works advantageously for each of you now in those portions of your lives with which you are pleased. In all such situations, it is highly important that you do not concentrate your main attention in that area of experience with which you are least satisfied. This acts as a deepening of hypnotic suggestion. Just reminding yourself of your other accomplishments will by itself operate in a constructive fashion, even if nothing else is done. Such focus of attention on positive aspects automatically pulls your energy away from the problem. It also builds up your own sense of worth and power as you are reminded of adequate performance at other levels of experience. Whenever you are trying to rid yourself of a dilemma, make sure that you do not concentrate your attention upon it instead. This acts to cut out other data, and to further intensify your focus upon your difficulty. When you break that focus, the problem is solved. Pause. In another fast delivery, let us take another example, a very simple one. You are overweight. It is a physical fact. It grieves you, but you believe it completely. You begin a round of diets, all based on the idea that you are overweight because you eat too much. Instead, you eat too much because you believe that you are overweight. The physical picture always fits because your belief in being overweight conditions your body to behave in just such a manner. In the oddest fashion, then, your diets simply reinforce the condition, since you diet because you believe so deeply in your overweight condition. Until you change your belief, you will continue to utilize your food in the same fashion, and to overeat. Momentary gains will not last. Your entire behavior pattern operates according to the strong hypnotic suggestions given, and then of course your appearance and experience always reinforce your belief. You must, therefore, willingly suspend that belief. Using the exercises given in this chapter, you must make a conscious effort to insert a different belief, employ natural hypnosis in this new way. If you realize your own worth after reading this book, then that realization in the present can negate any past ideas of unworthiness that may have attracted you to the condition. The same applies if you are underweight, of course. You can eat a great deal for a while and only gain a few pounds, or find all kinds of excuses for not eating. You can be served the richest diet, yet gain no weight. You are not underweight because you do not eat enough food, or utilize it properly. Instead, you do not eat enough because you believe that you are underweight. No amount of food will be sufficient until you alter your belief. The same procedures as just given for those who are overweight should be used. In each case, body conditioning is set up through natural hypnosis. Daily behavior and chemical functioning smoothly follow according to the belief. Ideas of worth are involved here also, and the point of power as mentioned earlier. See the 657th session in chapter 15. In any area, great clues can be received simply through paying more attention to the conscious thoughts that you have during the day, for each of them serve as minute suggestions, modifying your behavioral patterns and affecting bodily mechanisms.